We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And welcome back to another jam-packed episode of Dads on the Air. It's Tuesday the 21st of September, and today we have an information-packed show. We have two interviews, both from the National Men's Conference in Newcastle last year. First up, we have a great interview by our own rocking pop Peter Vandervoord. He is interviewing Akiva Quinn, who is from Dad's Link, an organisation down in Victoria. And after that, we have another fun-packed, full information interview with Greg Andreessen and Peter Vandervoord, who are interviewing Darren Atkinson, who is an Aboriginal counsellor and works for Child and Parent Services in Melbourne and runs a program, a support program called I'm an Aboriginal Dad. So hang in there, enjoy these interviews, and we'll be back shortly.
Well, we're here at the National Men's Health Gathering at Newcastle, and with me today we have Akiva Quinn. Is it Akiva or Akiva?
Akiva Quinn,
Akiva, yeah. Quinn, I'm terribly sorry.
No problem.
Akiva's from Dad's Link in Victoria, I understand.
Correct.
A new program for dads, mainly separated dads. Welcome to Dads on the Air, Akiva.
And, thank you very much.
And could I start by asking you perhaps to tell us a little bit about how you come to be into this particular program? What's your background in coming into it?
Yes, well, I became a father myself 12 years ago, and I think, like a lot of dads, found that both exciting and challenging in equal measure. It really is a new phase of life when you take responsibility for another human being who is clearly, at least on some level, dependent on the support, the love, the kind of practical measures that you can provide to them. So that got me interested, obviously, in the whole area of fathering and what our society says, in a way, about the role of fathers and mothers, and how sometimes the father's role isn't as readily acknowledged as the mother's role.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And how did you get into become involved with Dad's Link? It's a new program, I take it. Explain what Dad's Link is.
Sure.
Like, perhaps.
Yeah, Dad's Link is a program that really looks to engage fathers with their children. So it's an activity-based program. We have sort of pool events around various YMCA centres. We all meet in a park and have activities. We do some significant community events, including a Father's Day brunch down in Melbourne and a Dad's Day Out, which is sort of a new day we've sort of added to the family calendar,
right,
which is
right.
A celebration of fatherhood, which takes place down the Mornington Peninsula at the quarantine station at Point Nepean. Very beautiful historic site, and it's right. Really a family outing, but just with a focus on including fathers.
Is Dad Link part of a larger group? Who funds Dad's Link, for instance? Or is it just an offshoot of some other group? Or?
Dad's Link is a new organisation. It was set up middle of 2007, so just a bit over 2 years ago now, by YMCA Victoria, Relationships Australia in Victoria, and the Life Is Foundation, which sort of looks at reducing risk-taking behaviours among young people, reducing self-harm and suicide risk. So sort of really trying to support children in families and support fathers kind of as a very significant protective factor in their children's lives.
Well, some of those things you just mentioned, for instance, children self-harming and depression amongst children, a lot of that is caused also because of a lack of father in their life, isn't it? You would see that a lot in your...
Yeah, no, that can be a factor. Look, certainly children are best protected when both parents are actively involved, and we've heard at the Men and Family Relationships Forum that we're attending here in Newcastle, yes, some really interesting research from Richard Fletcher and others, which, you know, looks at the kind of importance of that early attachment to both fathers and mothers, and how that actually has an effect on the child's brain. Sort of not just the connection with the child, but the strong love and caring relationships between a parent and a child actually influence the development of a young baby. So fathers can make that contribution. Fathers make a particular contribution in terms of a slightly different style of interaction, slightly more activity-based, slightly more adventurous interaction sometimes with their children. And in any event, you know, the father's participation and the mother's participation are complementary, because each human being obviously has their different gifts and their different insights and their different education and experience to share with their child.
I guess every relationship has their problems, whether you're still in a relationship, still intact or not, but they certainly increase once the relationship comes to a halt. You know, then one of the main things is then, I think, with fathers, that in so many cases they lose contact with their children. Is that one of the main things you would deal with?
Yes, I mean, you're absolutely right, Peter. There's the particular challenges that separated fathers have in maintaining a relationship with their children. And Dad's Link is very squarely sort of looking at an inclusive model where the activities are available for all fathers, whether they're sort of in a couple relationship or whether they're in a separated family. But certainly for particular of the programs that we offer, including the sort of support services, which involve sort of discussion groups and kind of what we call a dad's gathering, which is kind of a place for fathers to get together and share their experiences, are particularly helpful for separated fathers.
During this convention here, the gathering here, we've attended quite a number of presentations by Indigenous group, and it would appear that they are really revving up the formation of men's groups to combat the general negative image that is constantly being presented of males being stupid or dangerous. This applies especially in our own community since the government intervention. Do you see this happening with the men in the wider community? Do you see there's an increased emphasis on men having to get together and support one another more? Do you see that happening? Or
I think there's a lot we can learn from our Indigenous brothers, because I attended the first day of the men's health gathering, and there was the Indigenous program running at the same time. And I think the focus within Dad's Link is all about community and really engaging with fathers, you know, through the schools, through the other services they use. And the opportunity there, I think, is that fathers can actually get together sort of in a peer support environment and help each other and deal with some of the, you know, characterization of men as being not a positive influence simply by their own lived example.
Yes.
Because fathers are actually, you know, when you take the photos or you look at the video or you're just on a weekend camp and you see children, fathers interacting with their children and vice versa, you just see those positive role models.
Yeah.
One of the most inspiring bits of footage we've seen here at the men's health gathering was in fact from the Indigenous closing ceremony.
Yes.
Where we got to see,
we saw that, yes.
Yeah, children need dads, and we just saw everyday Aboriginal fathers interacting with their children and the smiles and the connection. And that's very much the hands-on approach that Dad's Link follows, which is let's get the guys together with their kids, so as opposed to sometimes the support groups where one never meets the children who in fact make Bob or Peter or whoever else is in the room a father. That's the reason why they're a father, because they've got these children in their lives.
And they can't see them.
And sometimes the fathers can't see them, but where the fathers can see them, then one gets to know the father in his family context.
Right.
With regard to fathers who can't see their children, sometimes a program like Dad's Link, because it provides a supportive environment, there have been a number of fathers who've come along on our weekend camps, for example, and there's one who's planning on coming along to one we're doing in November down at Phillip Island, who haven't seen their children for a while.
Yes.
And it's sort of an opportunity where, with their ex-partner, they can actually negotiate that this is a safe environment, that if the children might be a little bit uncomfortable or there's some need for support for the father in his role, that there'll be other people around who can kind of, you know, facilitate in some small way that contact. So Dad's Link is really trying to address fathers' desires in a way to be more involved in all family types, and particularly to support, you know, separated fathers who face all sorts of obstacles and who need social support. They need a community, they need connections, they need a friendship group for themselves and for their children.
And men are generally, have always had that, I suppose. We spoke about it earlier, that men are reluctant to seek support or help. You know, we've got this, it'll be all right, I'll look after it and I'll deal with it. And men don't cry and, you know, this stiff upper lip. And if you are expected to be the protector, you can't sort of go down in a screaming mess and admit that you can't handle it. I mean, that's one of those things. So how do you... I noticed with the indigenous groups, they especially put emphasis on, they call it the level of trust that's got to be achieved within the group before they actually open up. So do you have that too, like where people won't open up for a while till they actually know all the people and trust them enough to speak from the heart?
That's very true, and one of the opportunities that Dazzling provides is you can come along to a Sunday event or something else and just do an activity, be involved in a shared activity which involves the children, and sometimes sort of meeting other fathers, other parents through their children is then a very effective way of just starting the conversation, and there wouldn't necessarily be any great need to open up in that context. Then on a weekend camp, the sort of level of engagement can deepen. Again, there's a whole lot of activities. It's a program camp for the weekend.
There's so nothing like sitting around a fire at night and relaxed and that, and that's been, I suppose, in those sort of settings.
Yeah, so once you've sort of shared the, you know, the adventures on the canoes or the high ropes and taken some risks together and, you know, shared some adventures with other fathers and with your children, other men's children, then there's that discussion which we try to convene, keep it sort of very informal, but really give fathers an opportunity to then talk about, you know, just the challenges of balancing work and family, challenges of keeping in touch with their children, dealing with separation and those sorts of issues. And one thing we find very important is a lot of organisations, including Relationships Australia, which has funded us, is that a short course can provide an opportunity to provide some education, some information with men, for men dealing with a particular situation such as separation, the challenges of that. But fathers, separated fathers in particular, actually need ongoing support, need to have a sense of being able to call on their peers. And that's where, you know, following a dad's and kids adventure camp on a particular weekend, we then got, you know, a dad's gathering every month or two, and that becomes a regular group, and the trust develops.
And you act as a facilitator in those sort of groups?
Well, myself and also Tony G, who's worked with Relationships Australia for many years, and now is in fact involved with the Life Is Foundation, which we were talking about before. And so the two of us, we just sort of take a participant role in the group.
Right.
We do have a lot of experience in facilitating men's and fathers' discussions, but really it's a peer space where you know, men can talk and can share. And even people who come along to, you know, those dads' gatherings for the first time, they get a sense of what the supportive environment is that's on offer. And even if they tell a little bit of their story, they hear other men speak, which...
You learn from each other, don't you, really? And they can probably watch other men, how they relate to their children and how they act, you know, how they engage with their children. You can learn from each other that way, can't you?
No, 100%. That's one of the key values that sort of grounds what we try and do with Dad's Link, is to have those, you know, weekend activities where fathers are basically modelling in a community setting positive behaviour in terms of their fathering roles with respect to their children. And it's kind of it's a shared collective experience than in you. Okay, that's how a particular dad deals with, the child who doesn't quite want to stop doing whatever activity they're doing when the time is appropriate.
That's right.
You learn. You really learn from that shared environment.
Yeah, that you learn that there are other ways of other approaches you can take instead of the only one. You may have only seen your own father or your own relationships, and suddenly you realise, my upbringing wasn't so bad, or it was bad. You might say, there is another way, a better way.
Just see the potential, because so many fathers have this wonderful, close, loving, connected, listening relationship with their children.
Yeah.
Firm when they need to be, but loving and attentive overall, and one can just actually be inspired, learn a few particular approaches, but really just be inspired by the example of that's how you do it. That's great.
I'll follow that.
Follow that. Just re-energizes you to keep doing the things.
Yeah.
And I think for separated fathers, who have found their needs can be met through a program like Dad's Link, it just allows them to have some support and it provides sort of a social environment as well. So then there's activities as a group you can be involved with.
Yeah.
In fact, there's other community groups besides Dad's Link I'm aware of, around Melbourne, around Victoria, where this, community-based, activity group is actually very... very effective. It works very well.
Yeah. How do people find you get referrals from other service providers, perhaps, and say, look, this will be a good group for you to join, or how do people approach you first?
Partly through our founding partners, so through Relationships Australia, the various branches in Victoria. They're the short courses that I mentioned before. For example, there's a men's separation and parenting course, which has been run for now a good decade, which was set up actually by Tony G and others in the late 90s. So those sorts of groups, and I now work as a facilitator on those sorts of programs, they actually, we just tell the participants towards the end of the program about Dad's Link and would they like to be involved. Mm-hmm. So it really provides a bridge, from a short-term, program, a bit of education, a bit of information, a little bit of a kind of shared community. If people want it, some can then come along and be involved in Dad's Link. Also through the YMCAs, we're finding some interesting crossovers. The YMCA is very interested in family. It's one of the core kind of the three core values. The one is about family, the one is about strong individuals and strong communities. So we've been putting out a newsletter for Dad's Link now for the past 2 years. We do it roughly every 3 months, and we've been writing content which is about engaging fathers. Sometimes it's helpful to name that a program is for dads, because then fathers don't think, oh, it's for parents, meaning that's mothers, as certain people at the gathering have highlighted. Is actually a problem in the community when there's a parenting group or something, people think, oh well, that's quite possibly for mothers, which is something we should all challenge, because...
Yes, that's another challenge we face.
It's for parents. Yeah. And so within the YMCA, the kind of focus on families, and there have been some seminars which have been done. We've had Louise Porter, who's a well-known author. Children Are Human Too, is that the name of the book? I forget.
Okay. Something like that.
Yeah, so very interesting speakers, and really partly through Dad's Link, I was very pleased. The evening session that was run at a particular local YMCA in Melbourne actually attracted almost as many dads as mums. And that was very exciting. And now there's new publications that are being planned. So we've had a Dad's Link newsletter, as I mentioned, for the past 2 years. But there's going to be a sort of strong families publication put out by YMCA Victoria, which will go to several thousand members. And they actually want to use some content from the Dad's Link, the Dad's newsletter. So some of it is for parents, some of it specifically for fathers. So I'd encourage your dads out there, connect locally, have a voice.
Yeah.
Talk to people, at your child's school, and just be involved. Be heard as a father, because your role is valued.
Important, yeah, absolutely. I guess a lot of the people that you come in contact with through this Dad's Link, I guess their life and their relationships are often in stress. That brings them to you in the first place. But can you tell us what typically would be some of the stories they tell you, or some of the reasons that bring them to you in the first place?
Okay, I can think of one dad who was seeing his children regularly but was having a lot of issues with contact.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, there's nothing a support organisation can necessarily do. There's nothing directly that Dad's Link can do.
No.
But he seemed to find it very helpful just being able to share the experience with the sort of facilitators mm-hmm. within Dad's Link and with other fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And over the 2.5 years, because this particular individual's been involved right from the start of the program, I can really see a sort of an evolution where he accepts the difficulties, works through them, and is now a sort of source of wisdom, in a sense, for others in the group.
Yes.
And there's just sort of that mellowing and mellowing of attitude and dealing with the situation, trying to find...
So he was having trouble remaining in contact with his children?
Well, it's just sort of the transitions were always kind of troubled.
So
that's sort of one example, yeah.
Do you see sometimes in those sort of cases, do you see a sense of powerlessness amongst the separated men, especially with regard to remaining in contact with their children? Do they feel, well, where do I go? You know, I've been to court and I've got orders and they don't even comply with that. So where do I go now? You know, and they get into a state where they can, you know, go from homicidal to suicidal to all sorts of alcohol abuse and all sorts of problems. So do you see that there's a sense of powerlessness in some of the men that approach you in the first place?
There's a real sense of frustration in many cases, and that can lead to a sense of powerlessness if a father doesn't get the necessary support and feel that they have some avenues, at least for, you know, if there's an intervention order or something, for contesting it or for sort of waiting the time that's necessary to then be able to re-engage with their children.
Mm.
And through some of the men's separation and parenting groups, I can think of a good number of cases where you actually see the remarkable strength of fathers that are in a group, okay, so they get the opportunity to get a little bit of support, to sort of debrief, to tell their story. But, you know, they'll wait the month, 2 months for a court hearing, and there's
that's a horrible time.
Very difficult for the fathers involved, a lot of frustration, and I think understanding that emotion and understanding the difficulty being heard in that situation, I think, is so important for fathers then to manage the emotions and to manage the situation, to try to find the constructive response, as opposed to being tempted into what seems like the only available response, which is an aggressive or a violent one.
Yes.
And
sometimes... Or substance abuse or suicide even, the whole range of things. We don't know till we're faced with it what route we would take to deaden the pain that occurs.
Yes.
There's no deeper pain than that. And what a lot of people don't realise, that waiting time you just mentioned, 2 or 3 months or something before it goes to court, that is often used to turn your children against you. And you see these kids that once loved you and run up to you with open arms and, oh, Dad, you're home, and you do all, you know, go on outings and you love them dearly and they love you. All of a sudden, the same child, after 3 months waiting, says, I never want to see you again, and you're a bad dad, and don't ring me up anymore. I don't want to come and visit you.
Yes.
And this is in that 2 or 3 months period of waiting. This is what often occurs.
Huh? Yeah, there's some, unspeakably, almost unspeakably tragic situations where fathers are, it would seem, quite deliberately excluded for a period of several months, and then the phone contact, if they're still allowed that, becomes the children telling their father that they don't really need him in their life anymore, which sounds awfully like the children are parroting something that their mothers have told them. And, I don't think one can resolve all of those situations, but in a way, perhaps the best message for fathers is to get some support. Some people have friends, a family who can support them in that situation. There are a lot of very good peer support organisations. Dad's Link performs that role for those who discover us on the internet or through various referrals and so on. And it's not a formal referral that's, you know, required. It's really just, you know, we put out a newsletter, several hundred copies through family relationship centres and neighbourhood houses and everything else. And I think the best way forward for fathers in that, you know,
patience
almost...
maybe is one of the things, isn't it?
Yeah,
patience. Nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
And those who have that patience often come out at the other end, you know. There is other opportunities that come down the track by being patient.
No, I think that's right, actually. Patience is probably the key in getting some support. Someone isn't on one's own, because separation hits fathers in particular like a ton of bricks. Mothers, several speakers at this gathering have mentioned this, mothers will often take their support structure with them.
Yes.
Their social supports will remain largely intact despite the separation. Children themselves, and ongoing contact with children is well understood to be a very strong protective factor. So, you know, your social connection, your kind of reason, your kind of motivation in life is going to be very strongly influenced by having the responsibility of looking after your child. Fathers really are quite at risk, and the father-child relationship, sadly, still in about one quarter of cases where fathers separate from their partners, I should say, and hopefully don't separate from their children. That's the almost the Freudian slip there. That's not what's intended to happen. That's it's an adult relationship that's come to an end. It shouldn't be the parent-child relationship.
No.
But nevertheless, you know, some 28%, I think the figures are currently, of fathers actually completely over time lose contact with their children after separation. So really get some support, make the right decisions by, you know, exercising the patience that's required, and then find the constructive way back in. And
not easy.
Not easy at all.
Because the longer you've lost contact, the harder it is to reconnect, you know, and you lose all sorts of experiences along the way that you might have enjoyed, that you can look back on, that are wired in the brain. I remember that outing, or I remember this, and when you have several, you talk to Indigenous people, and they will tell you all that, how difficult it is to link up after 17 years of not seeing your child. You know, that sort of, and there's no history anymore of things that you've enjoyed as a family or as a parent relationship. And the system sort of allows that, in the best interest of the children, is often seen. But what does that phrase mean? It can, if somebody, it can have different, 20 different meanings, you know, depending on who you ask. What's the best interest of a child? Did they stay with one parent, or do they remain in contact with both of them? And there's all sorts of other things. But it's a pretty destructive sort of system that we've set up. What I can see, you know.
Yeah, it can be very divisive, and I suppose what's helpful for fathers to try to understand and work with is one needs to keep an ongoing connection, albeit a more business-like one, with the mother of the children. So hopefully she's got a desire to keep an ongoing connection in the children's best interest with the father of the children, namely yourself. And really, you need to try to maintain respectful relationships, at least with the other parent. And there is sometimes a battle to the lowest common denominator, and someone hurls a bit of abuse and, you know, questions the father's role, let's say, as a parent. And it's very easy to respond in kind or worse, and then to take it on yourself, you know, and, you know, self-medicate with alcohol, with drugs, things you were talking about before. You've got to get the support and recognize your importance as a father. Because once you've done that, then you're going to do what's really in your children's best interest, which is to downgrade the conflict as much as you are able to not contribute to a conflict with the other parent. To try to get to a resolution, fine, there might be family law processes which are painful and costly involved, but to try to keep those as short as possible, avoid them, be more collaborative, negotiate a solution where possible, and then get on with the business of reaching some agreement so that the children can have both parents, which is surely the best option all of our children.
And the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child says that exactly. You know, every child, they have the right
to have regular
contact with both parents in their life.
They do, and that's why I'm sort of very pleased with, you know, what DazLink's able to do to support separated fathers and also to support fathers who are in couple relationships, because many fathers in, you know, one household family as opposed to two household family are really looking for opportunities to be more involved. You know, it's kind of well known that the vast majority of fathers would like more time with their children, you know, whether they're separated or they're not separated. And the trick there is to facilitate that, to try to actually give fathers, you know, the information so they're kind of aware of their role and their importance, and they're supported in that role, and the opportunities. So, you know, activities, there's programs, you know, which are about fathers being involved, you know, in the early childhood years, in the primary school years, you know, all opportunities. No one says fathers can't be there. They just sort of take the opportunity to be there.
Where there is hostility within by the parents towards one another, that's often enough to say, for a judge to say, well, we'll give the custody to one parent because there's too much hostility between the parents, and maybe the other one can have supervised contact. You know, do you see yourself as possibly, instead of being very clinical, you know, a supervised contact with somebody sitting here, you think DazLink, for instance, those group outings could be an alternative to that, where the other parent can actually take it, because there is supervision by the other people in the group and the facilitator, for instance, where instead of going to some room in somewhere where they sit with a person supervising the limited contact with your children, which is not a great atmosphere.
No, of course not.
You know, and it can be fun then as well, and they enjoy memories. Do you think that could happen in the future?
Yeah, look, we definitely open to fathers coming along, as long as there's no, you know, court orders in place which disallow them from doing so. There's the one father who is very interested in coming along, I mentioned before, on our November camp, who won't have seen his daughters, I think, for quite some months, for many months. And as long as, you know, the parents are in agreement with, you know, a weekend camp through DazLink being a contact and a fun, positive interaction opportunity with, you know, with dad, I think it works very well.
The general issue of men being sort of portrayed in a negative sense, the White Ribbon campaign is about to commence, and this only portrays men as perpetrators and women only as victims. What impact do you think that such lopsided view of reality has on men in generally, you know?
I suppose for me personally, the trick is for men not to overreact to a campaign like that, to perhaps see it in its context, that it is possible for individual men to make the wrong choices.
It's possible. Absolutely.
It's possible for individual women to make the wrong choices as well, and to engage in violence.
But a lot of, not mentioned, you see.
Understood. And I think my perspective is that the best response, in a way, is the positive response in terms of fathers and men's constructive engagement in their families' lives, and to, in a way, provide an alternative set of experiences, and, you know, perhaps even some media can evolve, as well as Dads on the Air's important, you know, coverage of these issues. You know, some videos and some resources that can be available on the web and everything else, which just depict the normal interaction. In the presentation, you know, I'll give on DazLink tomorrow, we've got a video of the camp. So you know, there's going to be some percentage, and people argue about the numbers of men and some percentage of women who are involved in violence, and a lot of, you know, family violence seems to be somewhat mutual. I've heard of many cases where there's an intervention order taken out on the one parent and there's an intervention taken out on the other parent.
Exactly.
So there's at least suspicions or concerns about, you know, psychological aggression or physical aggression on both the mother's part and the father's part. So
the thing is, that doesn't get aired enough in the mainstream media. Like, you talk about these the videos that you have about the positive, you know, vision of fathers and children enjoying themselves at Dad's Link, camping outings and that. But unless that gets to the mainstream media and you see it on the big screen in your lounge room, but you only hear the other side, which is all negative. And that's when you look back on when we, for many years, we stole the Aboriginal children from their parents. We only heard that was a good thing for those kids, and they get a better education, and their parents are not worthy of looking after their children. They don't do it. They have alcohol problems, and they're aggressive, and they will put them in institutions and so on. But we never heard any comments from the parents what they felt. We only just heard one side, and the community at large accepted that at face value. We're very trusting, and in a sense, this is what happened. If you constantly bombard the media with, like the White Ribbon campaign goes for a month, and they have high profile people supporting it, and that's pretty powerful to you know, it'll last till next year, that sort of thing. It's ingrained in the general community. If everybody accepts that violence should not be condoned, but it's violence is violence is violence. It can be, as you said earlier, it can be committed by both genders. There's no one gender has a monopoly on that.
Indeed.
And but it should be, we, most of the people in the men's movement, certainly feel that it should be better presented in a balanced fashion, because it's government funded. For government to fund only half of its constituency, and make that makes the other half look bad. I don't think that's good policies myself.
Well, I suppose the challenge is for people who are advocates for men and for fathers to acknowledge the problem with violence, to try to recast it as a problem precisely with violence, to try and get the campaigns not to have an overtly gendered perspective.
Yes.
And that would be very helpful, in my view.
Yes,
And that would create some balance, and at the same time to put the emphasis on the fact that most fathers and most mothers in the majority of families are precisely there as the best possible carers and support for their children. We hear the occasional case in the media, of course, about parents neglecting or abusing their children. Those cases are more frequent than they should be, but certainly overall, parents are best positioned to look after their children.
In the main.
In the main.
I mean, there's always exceptions, but but you can't build policies on the those exceptions, as extreme as they may be. That's not very wise, in my opinion.
I think that's right. You don't want to remove the role of parents in general because of the, you know, the difficulties that a few face. And the intervention, I suppose, in terms of family violence, should try to understand the source of the problem, should try and actually deal with the reasons why, you know, support the perpetrator as well as the victim, or maybe they're both in each capacity in many cases.
Exactly. How do people find you, Akiva? We're just talking about Dad's Link, and people have to find out where you are.
Yes, that's a very good question. So we've got an email address, which is Dad's Link, or one word, DADSLINK at YMCA.org.au. So of more interest to people who are in Victoria, I guess, as that's where we operate.
Absolutely.
But we definitely encourage people to look on the YMCA Victoria website or the Relationships Australia Victoria website, and they'll find links on both of those.
And phone numbers? Is it manned 24 hours a day? Or?
No, really. It's a sort of activity-based program, so it's not really offering a telephone support or anything like that.
Right.
People can get hold of myself, through the YMCA Victoria offices, and the numbers, I guess, for that also would be on the website. But do send an email or to look at. We've got newsletters, we've got information on past, dads and kids adventure camps. We've got information on, sort of Dad's Day Out coming up in late February, February the 28th, down the Mornington Peninsula.
And what sort of cost are people looking at?
Yeah, there's no membership fee, so camps attract a sort of cost in terms of, accommodation. We've managed to get some subsidies actually for those, so reasonably affordable for dads and kids at this stage. The other events are community events, so we fund them. Come along and enjoy them with your with your children, with your partner, and
Well, we hope after this that you'll be inundated with, you'll need extra funding. And
there you go.
Kiva, we've almost run out of time. What words of wisdom would you like to give to those of our listeners who are perhaps struggling with their fathering role at the moment?
Yeah, just to take the time to look after yourself and to invest, I guess, in your own sort of education and your own resources and sort of knowledge about the very important role you've got as a dad, and then to, based on that, have the time with your children to enjoy the practical hands-on parenting opportunities, which are great for dad and wonderfully beneficial for your child.
There you go. Great words of wisdom from Akiva Quinn from Dad's Link, Victoria. Akiva, thank you very much for coming on Dad's on the Air this week, and we wish you all the success that I'm sure you wish yourself and the program.
Thank you. Thanks to Dad's on the Air for a great job.
No, I- they grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
We're here at the National Men's Health Gathering in Newcastle, and we're here with Darren Atkinson, and he is the Aboriginal counsellor for the Child Protection Services in Melbourne. Is that, did I get that right, Darren?
Child and Parent Services.
Okay.
Is the support services new label. So.
Okay, and he also runs a great program called I'm an Aboriginal Dad, and so why don't we'll start off, Darren. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself and your background first, and then we'll sort of maybe go into talking about the services.
No problem. Well, I am a Bangarang man from the Murray River country, down in the south of New South Wales. And I suppose my journey started in the crisis support area as a very, very young child or a young adolescent, if you like. My grandfather, he was a very well-known shearer around our community, around our country, and he was, I suppose, held in high regard by the members of the Cummeragunga mission community in that he played the advocate for any of the women that were facing, you know, domestic violence or the relationship breakdowns at the time. You know, because my grandfather was a very strong man, being a shearer, you know, he knew how to use his strengths, and he was approached very regularly by the women but also by the men on the Cumra. I recall as a young kid watching this take place, and that was eventually that role, I suppose, on the mission, on our Cummeragunga Aboriginal mission, was eventually passed down to my father. And when my grandfather got aged, and wasn't quite strong enough to carry on that role, it was passed on to Dad, and then my dad played that role. So, you know, it was virtually, as I said, being an advocate for the breakdowns, the relationship stuff. You know, the people came to my dad, and he played the counsellor, if you like.
Yeah.
He spoke to the couples and helped them sort out the issues and whatnot. And when my dad got to a point where he could not do it anymore, the role was passed on to me. And because my dad followed his father into the shearing sheds, and I did exactly the same. I followed my father into the shearing sheds, and I virtually lived the role of my grandfather and father as well on our community.
So there's three generations of shearers and counsellors.
I suppose you could say
you've got
that. Yeah.
I do have a son
that's going to. I don't think he'll be. Yeah, he's actually a shearer. He's in the shed at the moment. But I think with today, you know, today there's a better opportunity for men and brothers, you know, like myself, to acquire training around the delivery of crisis or in crisis support to our people. You know, there's the last sort of 10 years. The yarn about transgenerational and the effects from colonisation have really come to the surface. You know, so with that issue that's always we've carried as Aboriginal people, that with dealing with that issue come a new form of training to deal with it. You know, so by the time the role was handed on to me, I had the opportunities to go and do training. Lucky enough to all the powers be that I ended up working with a great support service that assisted me in developing the skills that I already possessed as a young, coming through my childhood and young adolescent. And I had the chance to sort of hone in on the skills that I was carrying. And I've been playing the advocate or the counselling role for the community now.
That's your current job?
My current job started 20 years ago before before I actually had actually started living on the mission, on the reserve. Right. And then, yeah, I suppose that to give you a better picture and understanding of why I ended up in the city, my daughter, I have four young daughters, and my daughter at age 10 got spotted playing basketball by some pretty influential people down Melbourne, and invitation was offered to her to come to the city at quite a young age and be involved with basketball down there. And she's got some great skills that are very uncanny for a child her age.
Mm-hmm.
And that was virtually what got me and my family.
And your whole family? You moved your whole
family? I moved my whole family off the mission for the benefit of my daughters, you know, to give them that opportunity to get something better out of life and be able to learn life skills that will better their walk in life, you know. And I think that being on the reserve now, they're very, very limited without being able to assess from a young adolescent's point of view, you know. And being a woman or a young lady, it's almost difficult to get them sort of skills.
So in hindsight, was it a good move?
It was a great move. It was probably one of the better moves I've ever...
Because it changed all your lives, didn't it?
It did. It changed all our lives. And well, the opportunities came up to, as I said, to better my the skills that I possessed living on the reserve, and
which was just acquired through your generational handing down all that experience of being a moderator or an advocate.
That's right.
But nothing formal at that point.
No, there was nothing formal until I hit the big city lights.
Yep.
and then it sort of then I was able to get the the credence in the way of the training and the diplomas and certificates that I now have under me to assist me with assisting our men. You know, so
tell us a bit about the program that you run, that I'm an Aboriginal Dad, and how did it come about? Were you involved from the start?
No, I was not. But the I'm an Aboriginal Dad program, support program, is a partnership between the old Children's Protection Society, which has now changed their name, as I just mentioned, to the Child and Parent Services. But it was really that change that had a lot of drive behind the support program, because the word protection just couldn't cut it. Just wouldn't cut it in the Aboriginal community.
Yeah, heard all that before.
Yeah, we went through the protection, the protection board. And the
word, thousands of kids under the guise of that helping.
Under the word protection, a lot of children were forcibly removed. So we were really, really, I suppose, overwhelmed or taken by the fact that this 128 or 120 odd year old support service was willing to change their name to engage Aboriginal people. Okay. So it really was a really great thing for the Victorian Aboriginal community as a whole, because most of the urban peoples now, the urban Indigenous peoples, they all still have links and strong connections to country, to their homelands and where they come from within the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was great that we could offer the support program to not only one sector of the Koori community, but the old state and all ages of men. You know, when the program was first designed, it was designed to be delivered to only young adolescent fathers. Yeah, and
who were coming in contact with that particular hospital? Or?
Yeah, we were coming in contact with the Mercy Women's Hospital.
Right.
75% of the Indigenous births, I suppose, successful at the hospital. So it was number one. It was the spot that we had to virtually create links and pathways between the support service and the hospital to create the program. You know, it's at the hospital where engagement is made with the fathers. They're encouraged by the physicians that the mothers see, the doctors, and mainly the health service. The Victorian Aboriginal Health Service has a lot to do with sending the ladies to the Mercy Hospital and all that. And then my work really starts there with the men. You know, I get to engage with the young fathers there and offer them to be involved with the I'm an Aboriginal Dad support group. That meets at the Banyule Council Men's Shed.
You mentioned you the Children's Protection Society was willing to change the name to overcome the
associations with that word.
So they would have, sometimes changing the name is simple enough to change the name, but it doesn't always change the culture or something. Did you strike a lot of difficulties overcoming suspicion by the Aboriginal people that say, well, it was a protection society and it might be called something else, but what are you offering?
The early stages of the program, you know, the setting up stages, I did face a lot of the
suspicion.
A lot of suspicion from both sides of the fence, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and I suppose a lot of strong suspicion came from the Indigenous community. Yeah.
Understandably.
Yeah, with what the Protection Society was about and was planning to achieve and stuff. But you know, once I suppose we created a safe place for the men. You know, was virtually the most important aspect of the program, and it took us at least 12 weeks before we could call the men's shed a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of all the, as you know, the past the misinjustices and the broken promises and the time will tell.
Yes.
Attitudes. So there was a lot of men turning up to the program, but not actually putting anything in.
No.
It took quite a long time before the men felt very relaxed. Yeah. You know.
Mm.
But now we've created that safe place, and we have a constant. The program's designed to engage young fathers all the time. So every time a young father presents to the hospital, there's always a vacant spot within the support program for him.
Right.
Mm. Now we've been. We're into our 6 month now of operation, and we have a 30 strong number of fathers.
And most dads come along regularly, week to week out?
Yeah, we're getting them regularly, you know, visiting every Thursday. We're almost to a point, you know, where we've got to reassess ourselves to cater, you know, virtually to cater for the amount of men that want to be involved in the program. And I think that we've reflected and really shared with the community that there's a safe place now exists where, you know, 12 months ago this place was virtually something that was only spoken about and there was no existence. So.
But it is one program that's provided by the society. What's the name of the society now?
Well, it's a child and parent services now. They've changed. You know, the name's been changed to reflect a better understanding. You know, of all communities and all people in the community, rather than just just a selected sort of.
They're not sort of like the like docs or something like it. It's more support.
That's right.
Before it gets to prevent it getting to that bad state.
That's right. Yeah, we're more of the preventative area. You know, we like to tie, and we tie in with the dads and the families, and we really assist them with parenting. Mm-hmm. You know, and we also offer we offer financial and support around and food and stuff like that. You know, we've got the program now as partnerships with as I've mentioned, the Victorian Aboriginal Health Service, and there's opportunity for ongoing health checks for the men. We now have doctors coming to the safe place, and men are opening up and talking about issues that we never spoke about before. Yes. You know, e.g. the diabetes, prostate, all the issues
and
like
men
that.
Are reluctant to go to the doctors at any time.
Yes,
all men.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We virtually got to bring the physicians or the doctors to us to get a 100% outcome. Yeah, it's great. We're really linking in with some great activities within the program. You know,
you played some really great slides during your presentation the other day, just, you know, some of the things that you guys have been doing. What are some of the things that you get up to in the group? We saw there's some cooking classes there and paintball and different social things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very well structured now in the way that we each month on the Thursday. So every Thursday each month, we're pretty well allocated to and to do things that are planned prior in the month prior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's on the Thursday of the first Thursday of the month, we do what we call curries in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there. A partnership has been built with the Heidelberg Community Health,
mm-hmm.
and they provided the space for us to gather and learn how to, I suppose, prepare meals that are high in nutrition and that are really healthy for our children. But we also like to do it the proper way. As I'd like the terminology I'd like to use, which every Indigenous person in this country will definitely understand, and I suppose that's doing it the Indigenous way, or the Aboriginal. Mm-hmm. And we really like to encourage that. So the program has got an open door policy with including our elders in the community. You know, so during the cooking classes, that we bring in our elderly, our grandmothers, our aunties, our grandfathers, and we include them in our curries in the kitchen, cooking class.
Right.
So maybe on the first Thursday of that month, we learn how to prepare the soft foods. So we'll bring in an elderly grandmother or an elderly lady to teach us how to prepare soft foods for our babies. So it's a transition
for the really young.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a transition from the milk.
Yep.
The milk, yes, and, yes, and to, onto the you know the
solids,
the solids, yeah, the solid food.
Had that been sort of lost a bit, had it?
It has. You know, all these stories were passed down through family kinship structures and yarns that were really belonged to families, and they've been, I suppose the strength of them has been really tattered over.
Yes.
Over
you're bringing it
through the past, and we're really trying to work with given the elders who still retain these. These stories or yarns of survival, the yarns of how to raise our children in the proper way. So we bring in the elders on, and they share with us how to prepare the tuckers and the foods that are healthy for our children. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we also we bring in the elders will come in and teach us how to change their baby bottoms properly,
mm-hmm.
what signs to look for,
mm-hmm.
what how to sterilise the bottles properly. The dummies and all that sort of stuff we're not told as young fathers. We're young.
Right.
You know, we're talking about working with 16, 17-year-old dads fathers, here that come from broken families and really have a lot of issues in their own backpack.
You've got no good role models.
No. I suppose the role model sort of hadn't been an influence in their life, and they really struggle with playing the role of a leader, you know, for their newly established families.
And what about traditional methods of cooking or something? When you
yes.
all that, do you do all that as
yeah,
well?
Yes, we also do that. We perform the traditional way of cooking, which we also include the elders, and we do the cooking in the ground. You know, and that's also done with as close to as traditional as we possibly can get it. But we keep the we're very very high on hygiene, so we break ourselves into four groups within the one group on the cooking day, and we all are allocated, jobs to perform for that day.
Mm. Right.
So when we do have a big cook up and we do cook in the ground, we invite the whole families. We invite our families and we put on a family day.
Mm-hmm.
You might have noticed in some of the image we had the children there.
Right.
We bring in. It's a great opportunity to bring in the animals that are rural, you know, the young cows and sheep, which the people in the urban setting never, the young children especially, never ever get a chance to see and touch and feel and smell. So
that's right.
So it's great to be able to bring that to the kids that haven't got that opportunity through financial or whatever it may be to go home, to get back to the homeland.
And what about some of the traditional language? Do you, because they are brought and born and bred in the city.
Yes.
So do you bring any of the language, traditional languages?
We're very lucky that there's a lot of work being done around in the restoration of our languages in Victoria. You know, so there's a couple of great organisations. I couldn't probably name them right now, but they've spent a lot
a time, I suppose, regaining all the information that's been stored, you know, that's been put in the archives and been put in the libraries, and that, that was the private sort of writings and stuff that, that, that people have withheld or held, you know. And a lot of this has been compiled now, and it's been passed back to the community, you know, passed back to the likes of the Cumra Gunja, the mission, and to the Framlingham mission, and then and the Lake Tyers mission, you know, where all these, where in the early days all these were really taken from the people and stored in the libraries and sent overseas and that, you know, exploited, if you like. But, but it's great now we're at a stage where we can get, we're slowly getting this. We haven't got it all back, and I don't know if we ever will, but I'm hoping and praying that we will.
Yes.
So it'll become a living language again rather than being sort of stored
in books. That's right. Yeah, because we do, a lot of it has survived, you know, a lot of that, but it's very, very broken. But we do, a lot of it has been retained through, you know, through oral stories and oral yarns. And
the people are interested in getting that back to the people you're working with?
Yes, right? Yes. Well, the Fathers Group's got a great range of talent. We also have ownership of a dance troupe that belongs to the Narangita Fathers Group. And Narangita is a, the word Narangita is a Bunjalung word, and that's a Port Melbourne tribe, a tribe of Port Melbourne, sorry, and that means leader of the clan. So we've adopted our language, our meaning for our Fathers Group, which means Narangita means leader of the clan. So the Narangita's Fathers Group as a great skill base of men that have, I suppose, have held their cultural beliefs very, very high and very strong, through their track to where, you know, to where they are today. But in saying that, you know, we have ownership of the group has ownership of a dance group, which now has been actively employed by the organisations in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, so there's employment created for the men and for the young adolescent men as well. But we also have on the second Thursday, the first Thursday I just mentioned was the cooking. On the second Thursday, we have what we call Regeneration Day, and on that day we go out to our burial grounds, which is Waroona. That's our Aboriginal cemetery in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. And every second Thursday, we spend the day out there doing, you know, the regen. We do the maintenance on our people's graves, and we're also in the midst of installing shady spots and seats for our elders. You know, places of comfort where they can come and visit our the past. The people that have passed,
The traditional culture, was it a patriarchal society, or how was it? Who was? How did you have the hierarchy within the traditional tribal?
No. We were all equal. We were all equal, and our elders sort of elder knowledge. You know, so so the elders were virtually the elders of the knowledge and elders of the secrets, and
they had the respect and the
culture. So respect, really. The elders were
so both the males and the females were both respected equally. There was no dominant gender.
No, that's right. Whereas, of course, not forgetting men and women's business, you know, which was a separation of men and women's business that may have affected the old clan.
Yes.
You know. So, but any decisions that were made for the clan or for the people or children of the clan was done on an equal basis from the elders. Okay. So no one ever had that final say.
And with all the destruction that has taken place over the years with the culture, what is the status of the male or the female or the elders? Has that changed over the years? Is there a lesser respect, say, because you're also, when you turn your TV set on and you see an advertisement something that puts men down, whatever colour they are.
That's right.
So are you affected? Have you lost some of the status within your own communities as a male? Do you feel that, or do they sense that? Or,
yeah.
Or?
Yes, yes, you're right in saying that, and I think it really started to become noticeable for myself on Cummeragunga around the early 80s. You know, when the American influence started to hit the reserve, hit our mission. Well, then with the American influence came a great loss of respect. And our young men started to sort of fade away with the levels of respect, I think, from the influence of the Americanized way of communicating and living, you know, which
definitely... Women obtained more power, too, through the pill and... You know, the women's movement itself gained power. That, because in your traditional society, you didn't have that problem because you were size equal. But we were probably a patriarchal society, which women wanted some better equality.
Yeah.
But in the process, sometimes they set out to destroy the male.
Yeah. Or to take you back to colonisation days, I think the effect really started there. You know, the disempowerment of our men in them times. You know, the loss of the use of hunting and gathering grounds, which really gave us the roles of the leaders and the role models. You know,
and providers and protectors.
Protectors. And you know, sort of when that came, when we weren't allowed to speak our language anymore, when we weren't allowed to hunt.
And the male couldn't protect his family anymore.
That's right. And then the roles were handed to the women by default. The women picked up our roles, and we really supported the women around being our mainstays, around being our talkers and our speakers. And,
is that right?
Well, down around home, down around Victoria, we've got a lot of great women that are great leaders and have been great leaders from the 70s and 80s. And
why was that? Through. Because the male had lost... self-esteem or something?
A lot of I think shame became a very big issue, through loss of and disempowerment. You know, so a lot of men were very, very and still are, the ripple effect is still there today, very ashamed to I suppose approach anybody in the way of support or employment or you know, and as you know, back in the early days, our men had to have permission to leave the mission and all that kind of stuff. So there was a real authority abuse. So they had to ride away to government departments to get permission to go 2 km away from the mission gate, you know, to dig a hole for somebody else or a farmer up the road. They had to ride away and wait for confirmation before they could go and earn money. You know, so... years and years of compounding of asking to leave to go and work to provide, it just became too much for our men.
And then they started self-medicating with alcohol and
that definitely created a void in the spirit, you know, and the void had to be filled. And the quickest and easiest way to fill the void, as we know, is to hit the drinking and whatever else is around at the time, but. That alcohol was an easy solution, you know, that filled the void, it took away the pain, so to speak.
And what about the role of welfare? If the traditional role of the Aboriginal male was you know, the hunter and the provider for the family, with the dependence of welfare sort of replacing that role in a sense.
That's right.
But if the traditional Aboriginal woman's role was, you know, nurturing the family, I guess the women still could maintain that role, but the men with welfare had their role eroded more than the women's.
That's exactly right. Because we can't discount the stolen generation.
We haven't even brought that up yet.
That really destroyed
the fabric.
That's right. But our mothers and our wives and they retained. They retained the strength to keep the community strong.
Well, the men basically gave up.
I don't think the word "gave up" is really appropriate. I think it's more forced. A level of force that we were sort of had to give that up, or we couldn't, you know, this couldn't be done or that couldn't be done, you know. But I think our women always retain that closeness
resilience.
And that resilience and that connection, you know, connection to country, and it's only in the last sort of
25 years, I suppose, that we've seen our men sort of
regain
strength and you know the birth of our culture again or the uprising of our culture again is more prevalent down around home and around Victoria, and you know there's more cultural based programs that
the young people really have a thirst or a hunger for culture.
That's right. There's been a real, you know, we've had 20 years of American culture now, and I think our elder, well, I speak for my immediate family.
Sure.
Right now is that I see a shift in them, in their attitudes. You know, they're sick of the daggy trousers and the caps on back the front and the flash runners. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and affordability too, being able to afford these and keep these up is really, really a financial strain on a family that lives in a remote area or even in an area that's close to an urban setting. You know, so I think now there's that realization from that gender that financially we can't afford to be listened to too much. What do they call it? Rap. And there's been a big shift with our kids wanting to come back to learn about their own culture.
Oh, right.
You know, and learn about their own stories, and virtually it's strengthened us as a.
Has the community been inspired by watching President Obama as a black man gain the top job? Has that been inspiring?
It has. That was a great inspiring.
All over the world.
For the Fathers Group, I suppose we was in the stage of virtually setting ourselves up at that point. And so Barack got the vote, we virtually all jumped for joy because we virtually took it as a stride as that
we can do it too.
If they can do it over there, well then yeah, we can have a safe place here, or men's group here. So we really took that on board that there was a black man had finally gotten to the most powerful spot in the world. Yeah. Mm.
And to are Aboriginal women supportive of, you know, the Fathers Group and this recent really drive for Aboriginal men to really retain their, you know, their place in the families and communities that might have been eroded?
Yes, there is. I'll tell you one thing that I've heard from the age, I think I'm can say from the age of 10, you know, and I'm 43 now, 44 I'll be in a couple of weeks, but I've always heard the women in my circles and in my community scream, you know, we want our men back. We want our men back. We want our men back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want our men to be our role models. We want our men to be our leaders. We want our men
to be good fathers.
So I think what I've really noticed with the ladies and the women, the young adolescent women in our community, is that they're really, really proud that the men have established a place that they can call safe. Mm-hmm. A place that they can, where they can convene and they can talk about issues that affect them at home, you know, the relationship stuff, but also what they're most, I suppose, what they're really, really, really happy about is that we're in a safe place where we're starting to talk about our health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now there's a lot of talk now about the prostate. The cancers, you know, all the sorts of cancers, and the diabetes, you know, and we've never ever had that place where we can convene and talk about these things in safety. You know? So we're getting 100% support from all the partners of the fathers that are in the group, and we've even been inspired of it enough now that they've started a women's group, and they're doing curry women in the kitchen now.
Oh.
So
good one.
Yeah, so they've liked what they've seen, and they're mimicking in their own in their own circle, you know. So they're gathering at the same kitchen we gather, but on a different day, and they go they go through the very similar stuff to us, but it's, you know, women's business. Or
so it's like the men's shed movement, isn't it? Your safe place is the same as the men's shed.
That's right.
It's going. And I noticed at Kempsey they have the women's shed now. The women, there's women's group now using the same shed, the same facilities, wood turning, and that, as and the women's shed.
No doubt, as soon as our women hear about that shed, they're going to be wanting one down home. No doubt. And they will soon. But that's great to see too. That really lifted us as fathers and as role models. Yeah. We really took that in stride.
It felt supported, and
we took that as a
compliment.
As a compliment, and it was really great for us to see our women want to support. Do what we were doing.
Yeah.
And that's something we never ever saw in any of our relationships. It was always us wanting to do something with the women and kids were doing. Mm. So it was great to be able to have that little bit of a shift and get the women to be wanting involved what we were doing as a leader and as a role model.
Mm. Mm. So you've been doing this for a while and all the dads feel comfortable and everything, sooner or later there's going to be a split up of somebody's relationship. How will you handle that? Because there's some draconian laws in place that we have to try and overcome. But do you have a sort of traditional side that you may approach it on?
Do you support, you know, each other as brothers?
Yeah, so that's right. We're 6 months now. We've been meeting regularly every Thursday, mm-hmm. and so we're. What comes with that safe place of being able to talk about issues comes also. Unbelievable and unforeseen support from another brother.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. I've never. You know. And in these safe places, is only the place you can only see it. You know. So we've been through that stage already. Yeah. We've had brothers fall out with their relationship and have big problems. But it was great to see the I suppose him bring that issue back to the circle. And the men were able to...
And he was comfortable to bring it up in the circle.
Yep. We're all at that stage now. Mm. We're all at that stage. Mm. And that's sort of... We've sort of promote that too from entry. Mm. You know, we're really, really saying all the time to the men, you know, to the dads, mm. you know, this is about talking. This is about us sitting and coming to one. This is about the theory. You know, this is about listening with action. You know, this is about understanding each other from the heart. Yeah. So that's what this program's about. So if you're coming to be involved, bring 100%. Mm. You know, don't leave nothing at home. Bring every issue you carry. So we really made that clear. So now we have men coming and they come to the door and they yell out, "Everybody, come in, sit down. I need to talk to you about something that's happening at home." You know? But it took us 6 months to get to that stage through confidentiality. A lot of testing was done.
Dipping the toe in the water.
Yeah, a lot of each other. You know, they were telling each other stories and stuff that weren't real at some stage to see how far that had go in the community. And the tests were done by the men from all angles.
Really?
So they really tested each other to find this. They all wanted the safe place and
to make sure it was safe.
To make sure it was safe, they put themselves through that. Mm. They put themselves through that... testing stage, I suppose, where they tested the men with stories and then they went away and they seen if that filtered out into the community or if it came back from the community, well then nothing else was going to be shared, you know, so none of that ever came back. Every man came
so
back.
So they knew they were
safe. So they knew everybody, that it was they knew that every man in the circle wanted the same, to be in the same place and that was somewhere safe. Mm. So now... The realisation is at home, and we are now
secret men's business.
Now, we are able to talk. We are able to talk and know that what we do say stays in confidentiality and doesn't leave the circle. So
you're helping. I just run it because our program often deals with these issues of separation and in our system, those children are often removed, sometimes forever. From the dad, you know, and for mums too, but mainly dad. So, you're advising your brothers to helping them cope with all that. But do you have women's groups, for instance, that say, look, you must make sure you keep the kids in contact with their dad, for instance, because that would be helpful too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yes, it is. It is.
Do you have anything like that, or
Yes, we do. We have a lot of dads. Look, that are in the group as well that have are parted, that have been parted for a number of years with their children now, and we support them in identifying pathways and bridgeways back to that connection,
mm-hmm.
With their children, and that's done through with the 100% backing of the children's and parents' services. There's the opportunity for our men to access counselling,
mm-hmm.
Deal with anger management, anxiety, all the, and even we're dealing with the transgenerational stuff, mm-hmm. like the past issues that we do carry as men and we never have had a chance to deal with, mm-hmm. So it's great to have that bridgeway to a support service that does navigate on it.
Yeah,
mm.
yeah.
And that's most important.
Yeah.
So whenever the men feel they're in need of, they want to talk to someone now,
mm-hmm.
The support services is really, really flexible with our counsellors, mm-hmm. and we make sure that can be met almost instantly, that yarn or that mm-hmm. talk.
Mm-hmm.
And what the support services has done is they've really, really understood the need for the Indigenous men to maybe feel comfortable with where they yarn and how they yarn, so they really, really promote the counselling session, if you like, to be outside, by a riverside or by the creekside.
Oh, okay.
Not so much that, we want to go on to the days of the four walls and the authority that's joined with that,
yes,
so
yes.
They really come to the party with the way we want to talk about our issues,
So it's in a setting that's comfortable for the men.
Yeah, and that's really played a big part in our engagement and our our outcome, our successful outcome with our getting the 30 up to 30 men every Thursday to show up.
So you try to keep them away from the, say, for instance, the court systems if you can. Try and resolve it within your community.
That's right.
And you engage the women in that as well? Like, do you approach some of the elders or the elders?
Yeah, the elders are constantly.
Some of these issues?
Elders are constantly involved in mm-hmm. with what we do, our activities, mm-hmm. I suppose the women in the elderly women in our community are not so much as involved as elderly men in our community, mm-hmm. Our program would not work without if we shut the door on our women in the mm-hmm. community,
mm-hmm.
because they hold the power and knowledge with being I suppose taking the right steps in them postnatal times,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. After babies just come along, mm-hmm. it's great to be able to bring in an elder, mm-hmm. an auntie, or mm-hmm. grandma,
mm-hmm.
to be able to share with the men
mm-hmm.
what's expected in these first couple of weeks of baby mm-hmm. arriving home.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's coming from an elderly lady, the men are just churned straight in and it hits home a bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly mm-hmm. involving the elderly in our community.
Mm-hmm.
But every third Thursday, or every last Thursday of the month, we have the family day. So that's everybody. We invite our grandmothers, our grandfathers, our aunties, our uncles, our...
And to yarn as well? Or?
To come to the table to yarn and to tell us to have an input in what they want the men to do, what they want the men to, so the whole community has a view or an idea of what mm-hmm. where we're going and what we want to, achieve.
Mm-hmm.
In the way of becoming great role models and great, great leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to be told, we feel, to be told from the elders how to be good, to be great role
models. Rather than the authorities.
Rather than the authorities or rather than just the men of the group.
Mm.
Because it doesn't sort of hold as much credence as it's coming from one of the elders.
So you still have to keep that respect for the elders.
So we really promote that, the inclusion of the elders and being involved in what they want their men
mm-hmm.
to be and for their grandchildren.
Mm.
So we that was the idea from the start, is that we'd only work with the younger dads. But it wouldn't and couldn't work that way.
No.
So we had to have open door policy to our whole Aboriginal community.
Mm.
Yeah. So
We're almost out of time. Maybe we should... do you have a final a message, perhaps, that you can say to the wider community, perhaps, some advice? Because we're learning from you as well, because you're already doing all this sort of stuff, and we have support systems as well. But anything you might say that this might improve our way of dealing with things, or do you feel?
Well, I'd like to, I suppose, cap it off by mentioning to the men out there, you know, about your inner being, you know, about the dairy, you know, D-I-D.
Which is?
I-double-R-I.
Meaning?
Meaning, it's listen with action. So it's listening with your whole being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're listening to your family or your children, listen with your whole being. Don't just listen with your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And keep the respect up and keep it strong and respect the elders.
That's a great message.
Great.
Now, if anyone wants to find out a bit more about the I'm an Aboriginal Dad program or get in touch with you, is there a website or a phone number or something that they could go to?
Yes, we do have a website. It's all the W's, of course.
Of course.
cps.org.au, and we have an Indigenous page there that has got a great explanation on what we deliver and how we go about delivering it the proper way.
Mm-hmm.
And also I can be contacted any time through the support service, you know, and our phone number there is 0394 900 500.
Okay, or cps.org.au.
.au.
Great. Darren Atkinson, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Dad's on the Air today.
Dad's in Distress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
And that's it for another week of Dad's in the Air. Thanks for listening, and if you'd like to re-listen to this program, you can always download it on www.dadsontheair.net. That's it for this week. Great week. Thanks to Akiva and Darren for their wonderful interviews. And next week, stay tuned. We have a very interesting interview with Andrew King from Men's Line talking about the services that they offer. So join us next week, and until then, stay safe.
We're Dads on the Air. We're here because we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're Dads on the Air.